Welcome to Diplomatic Dispatch, a podcast by Radio Canada International on rcinet.ca.
We did not take action to start a war.
Крым – это наше общее достояние.
I have a simple message for you. On behalf of 35 million Canadians, we're back.
Hello, I'm Levon Sevuns. This is episode 3 of Diplomatic Dispatch. Today we examine Canada's international development policy from a feminist perspective.
The federal government is taking a new approach, it says, to distributing foreign aid. Today, it announced Canada's first feminist international assistance policy. $150 million over 5 years will be committed to organizations that promote women's rights in developing countries. By 2022, at least 80% of Canada's foreign aid will go towards the advancement of gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls.
So my name is Kate Grantham. I'm a research associate at the Institute for the Study of International Development at McGill University. I'm also an international development research consultant focusing on feminist approaches. I'm here at the summit, though, in my role as the Vice President for the Canadian Association for the Study of International Development, or CASID. We're one of the founding partners of the summit, working alongside CCIC and other organizations, and I'm excited to be here.
Now, in 2017, the Liberal government unveiled its feminist foreign assistance policy and a very feminist foreign policy in a way as well. They have been reelected, although in a minority government. So what happens with this policy now? What are some of the challenges that you see going ahead?
Well, I think there's challenges on the domestic front related to being a minority government, as well as challenges internationally related to this kind of rise of right-wing nationalism, populism, anti-feminism as well. But on the domestic front, I think we face a battle having to do with just in some circles, what seems to be a waning enthusiasm or interest in international assistance more broadly. And this really came to light, I think, when then-candidate Andrew Scheer announced that if he was elected to be Prime Minister, he would cut Canadian international assistance spending by a third.
A new Conservative government will review Canada's overall foreign aid funding with a target of reducing the overall envelope by approximately 25%. We will cut 25% in foreign aid currently going to corrupt regimes and middle and higher income countries. It will start by taking the money that Justin Trudeau is currently squandering overseas and spending it at home to provide much needed and long overdue help to Canadian families so they can get ahead.
And I think a lot of the people in the international assistance community were really shocked by this. And I think it was an excellent wake-up call to remind all of us that maybe this agenda that we have, this feminist international assistance agenda that's been widely touted by the Liberals since 2017, is maybe not as secure as we thought it was. Maybe it has the potential to be used as a political football in the future, and that came out really strongly during the campaign. I don't think that there is enough education among the general Canadian public about what it is that our international assistance accomplishes, how much we're actually spending on it, and why it's so important. So domestically, I think we face challenges having to do with politics, as well as an awareness, a level of education among Canadians about what our foreign aid spending goes towards. Internationally, I think we're facing a real growing threat of right-wing populism, nationalism, a retreat away from the multilateral by our key, you know, historically key partners, especially the United States. Under the current administration, not only is there a retreat from being engaged internationally, but there is a movement away from what I would argue are more feminist approaches to international assistance, most prominently Donald Trump's decision to revoke funding for organizations discussing, advocating, funding abortion internationally, what's known as the global gag rule.
As before, we'll continue to refuse to provide assistance to foreign NGOs who perform or actively promote abortion as a method of family planning. Now, as a result of my decision today, we're also making clear we will refuse to provide assistance to foreign NGOs that give financial support to other foreign groups in the global abortion industry. We will enforce a strict prohibition on backdoor funding schemes and end runs around our policy. American taxpayer dollars will not be used to underwrite abortions.
So some of our key partners aren't working along the same tracks as we are in terms of what we think are important parts of international assistance. Feminism itself is a largely misunderstood term. I think it's come into the general lexicon more over the last few years. It's become maybe more mainstream. Some would argue to its detriment. Maybe it's been depoliticized in some spaces. But there is still a real gut reaction that some people have to the idea of a feminist approach or the goals of a feminist movement. And I think we are working against that every step of the way as well. Hmm.
Now, there's also been a lot of talk about the need to reevaluate Canada's foreign policy, maybe to recalibrate it. Yet, foreign policy was barely mentioned during the election campaign. Prime Minister Trudeau pulled out of the only foreign policy debate that was scheduled. How do you see this recalibration, and what should be its role?
That's a very good question. I think it was actually quite an interesting series of events that took place when Andrew Scheer mentioned or indicated that he would cut foreign assistance by 30%. I think it really raised alarm bells with a lot of the people in our sector, but in an ironic way almost, it really galvanized us as well to kind of speak about the importance of international assistance. And I think it does play a really key role in terms of Canada's partnerships and our position, our leadership position in the world. In terms of how I think it needs to be recalibrated, I think we need to see first a much stronger reinvestment in our foreign policy, specifically along international assistance lines, to meet that target of 0.7% GNI, which Canada historically committed itself to and has never met to date. But more than that, I think we need to start working across all of the different portfolios that comprise Global Affairs Canada. We need to work across trade, across diplomacy, and across international assistance to create a more coherent, a more comprehensive agenda so that those different pillars of Global Affairs Canada aren't working against the interests of one another. I wrote in a blog post called The F Word that's on CCIC's website right now that it's a real challenge that sometimes Canada's, you know, sale of armed vehicles to Saudi Arabia that are, you know, there's reports they're being used for military repression. That is in exact opposition of a feminist approach to foreign policy. There's lots of other examples about Canadian companies, mining companies, oil and gas companies, and supply chains operating abroad, and the extent to which they have been accused of different types of human rights abuses. All of these things are in contradiction with what Canada has said its approach will be to foreign policy, and that is a feminist approach. So if there's a recalibration of any kind that's necessary, I think it's that we have to start walking the talk and bringing all aspects of Canadian foreign policy in line with this vision of a feminist approach.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Diplomatic Dispatch, a podcast by Radio Canada International. Check out our other podcasts on rcinet.ca. You can also download them on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Critics of this approach would say, look where it got us with Saudi Arabia. Hmm. We one single tweet or a series of tweets by for then Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland resulted in a diplomatic showdown with Saudi Arabia. They kicked out our ambassador, recalled their own ambassador. How do you marry that concept or resolve this inherent what looks like inherent inconsistencies between this feminist approach and what would be like a real politic approach? We need Saudi Arabia for reasons A, B, and C, and we need to get along with them, whether they forbid their women from driving cars and living their houses without male supervision or not.
I acknowledge that the stakes are high and that the role of a diplomat like Chrystia Freeland, the position that she was in before her recent move, is a tough one. But if our options are that we retreat and we fall in line and we say nothing in order to go along to get along, or that we continue to push the agenda that we've identified as being central to our international policies, then I opt for the latter. I think this is the time in the world where we need leadership from countries like Canada. And I recognize that there can be consequences, and I'm sure there are ways of going about it that are smarter or more diplomatic or more strategic than others. But for me, the option of just staying quiet about fundamental human rights issues in order to, you know, keep the peace diplomatically is not an option that I would be willing to live with.
So, in practical terms, what would you like to see happen to have a discussion about Canada's foreign assistance, about Canada's foreign policy? What are the goals? What are we trying to achieve with this foreign policy and part of that foreign policy, the foreign assistance?
What would I like to see happen? I think that there was a real push when the Liberals were elected the first time around at the federal government level to support evidence-based policymaking. And I think that I have seen actually a real effort on the part of those working at Global Affairs to reach out to researchers, to academics, in different circles to learn about what is the state of evidence on different topics. How can we align our policies with what we know works or doesn't work to achieve different aims? And so that's something I would really like to see continue. I've also seen Global Affairs Canada do a really great job of trying to incorporate feminist approaches into the work they do, into the training they do, into their, you know, results-based management frameworks, all the technical sides of what they do. So I think continuing to work with experts in different areas, be it practitioners or researchers or academics, is a really key step for realizing the goals of an evidence-based policy. I think investing more to get as close to that target of 0.7% as we possibly can to make sure that we have adequate funding for the work that we're trying to do is another really critical piece of the puzzle here. And I also think there were some interesting comments at the opening plenary this morning talking about the need to link international assistance with a commitment on governments to abide by the human rights of their citizens, and the Philippines was the example that was given by Shirley Kiminyong about doing that with her government and the importance that that could hold. And so I think that's another interesting idea to explore, as well as the way that we allocate international assistance. Different governments have approached it in different ways, be it countries that are, you know, identified as being the most in need, or countries that hold a certain economic reciprocity opportunity for Canada, or in this case, Global Affairs is focusing more on a specific region of the world. But I think adding to that a layer of working in particular with governments that express a commitment to a feminist agenda would be a really important step. And in addition to that, I think Canada has done some really great work recently with the Equality Fund, which focuses on getting money directly in the hands of women's rights organizations, grassroots organizations, larger amounts of money, core funding for longer periods of time, because those are the groups that are really on the front lines pushing the agenda that Canada is saying that it is. So I think that those are all really important components.
As a father, I can say without a doubt that there's nowhere else I'd rather raise my daughter Ella Grace and my sons Hadrian and Xavier. But the rights we enjoy in Canada and the rights so many have enjoyed around the world are not guaranteed. Progress can backslide. We're seeing it happen. Gender equality is under attack. And I can only imagine how hard it is to be a feminist on the front lines.
But Canada is nowhere near that 0.7. No. We're not even halfway there. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to people who argue, listen, look at the conditions in our First Nations mm-hmm. communities, the water crisis, the childcare crisis. Before we invest anywhere in the third world, we should, invest in our mm-hmm. third world conditions in First Nations, rural communities. What do you say to that?
I think that in some ways it's a false choice, this idea that we either have to invest in poverty alleviation at home or abroad. There are other things that we could cut funding to. Defense spending would be one that maybe would be controversial, but it's one that I advocate could be a real option. I also think equally important is raising public awareness. I recently, for a few years, was teaching Intro to International Development at Huron University College in London, Ontario. And my students would come into their first year class, and we would kind of do like just a check-in to see what their existing knowledge was about different issues. And it was shocking to me that the lack of knowledge about, for instance, the residential school system or the history of slavery or colonization in Canada. So students who had gone all the way through the public education system up until post-secondary hadn't even learned about these issues. So it's not surprising maybe that the majority of Canadians don't understand what's at stake and the role that international assistance can play in the world, because they haven't even been educated on what's happened within Canada and Canada's historical role in the world. And so I think that public education, in particular having a curriculum at the primary school level that talks about decolonization, that talks about feminism, that talks about equality, is critical to getting more Canadians to understand what the work is that we're doing and why it's so important, bringing people on board.
So what is at stake?
So much. It feels like everything sometimes. It's a really overwhelming time to be working in this space, to see really hard-fought gains around rights to things like basic human rights, access to abortion, democracy. All of these things feel like they're being eroded, both in small ways and in really big ones. And so I think what's at stake is, it really feels like everything. What's at stake is our humanity. What's at stake is our democracy. What's at stake is the human rights of people all around the world. It's definitely no small order.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Kate Grantham. She's an international development consultant and the vice president of the Canadian Association for the Study of International Development. You've been listening to the third episode of Diplomatic Dispatch. Tomorrow, I'll be speaking with Alan Rock. He's a former Liberal cabinet minister, and he also served as Canada's ambassador to the United Nations. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to us by email. Our email address is english@rcinet.ca. And if you speak French, Spanish, Arabic, or Mandarin, make sure to check our other podcasts on rcinet.ca. You can also download them on Apple, Google, or Android podcasts, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also sign up for our cyber magazine to receive a daily selection of stories from Radio Canada International and Eye on the Arctic. That's our Circumpolar News collaboration project with public and private media outlets from around the Arctic region. I'm Levon Sevuns. Hope to see you tomorrow.